Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving into something pretty fascinating, I think. It's called integral orthopedics.
That's right.
And it's not just your standard bones and muscles stuff. It actually introduces some, well, new reflexes involving the vagus nerve and also fascia, you know, your body's connective tissue. It offers a really fresh way to look at how our bodies function and maybe more importantly, how we can heal.
It really shifts the perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And get ready for some surprising insights because we're going to explore how everyday stress, maybe stress you don't even notice, might be shaping your posture and your well-being.
Silently, often.
Yeah, easily, silently. And then how specific, sometimes really subtle interactions can help bring things back into balance. So the big question for you listening is, how closely are your stress responses tied to your physical alignment, your posture, and just your overall vitality? Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
So maybe let's start with the basics. When integral orthopedics talks about a reflex, are they just talking about the knee-jerk thing? Or is it broader?
It's definitely broader. I mean, yeah, the standard definition is something like an involuntary, quick, automatic answer of the body to a stimulus.
Right.
But integral orthopedics expands on that with what they call an integral reflex arc. And the first difference is the stimulus itself. It's much wider.
Wider how?
Well, yeah. It's not just a physical tap. It can be any kind of stress on your autonomic nervous system, your ANS, stress that might show up as tension in your pelvis or your shoulders.
Ah, okay.
And this is super useful for spotting what the source calls subliminal stressors.
Subliminal stressors. What exactly does that mean? Like things we're not consciously aware of?
Precisely. Not the big stuff, like a work deadline you're stressing over. These are more subtle, maybe unconscious things, lingering tension from something years ago, maybe an old scar that seems fine, or even something in your environment. Your body picks up on it, reacts, even if your conscious mind doesn't register it as stress. And conversely, the stimulus can also be positive. Things like energetic relief, certain types of touch, or even using a laser, say, on the navel or on a scar that's causing issues.
Okay, so the stimulus is broad. What comes next in this arc?
Next is the receptor, usually the skin or maybe a mucous membrane. It picks up that signal.
Standard enough.
Right. But then the information pathway, this is where it gets really interesting and, frankly, challenges conventional views.
How so?
It suggests information isn't just traveling through nerves in the usual way. It talks about a largely unexplored energetic stimulus transmission. Specifically, get this, photon conduction in the fascial intercellular space matrix.
Wait, photons, you mean like light? Traveling through our connective tissue.
Exactly. That's the proposition. That information, or at least some information, might be conducted via light particles within the very structure of our fascia.
Wow. Okay. That's a big idea. I imagine that sounds pretty out there to come people. How does integral orthopedics sort of square that with, you know, the nerves and chemicals we usually talk about?
Well, it's presented more as an additional layer, perhaps. A deeper, faster communication system. It suggests our bodies might be much more interconnected and responsive to subtle energies, physical or emotional, than we typically think. Like, imagine your fascia acting like a biological fiber optic network.
A fiber optic network inside us. Huh. Okay. So after this potential light speed message, where does it go?
It goes to a reflex center. It could be the spinal cord, the brain, or something called the solar plexus. Then there's the standard efferent nerve pathway, the response route, and finally the effector.
The muscles doing the work.
Right. And crucially, in this model, it's often the deep trunk and hip muscles involved in twisting the pelvis. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the iliopsoas, your main hip flexor.
Okay.
The opposing hip adductors, the quadratus lumborum in your lower back, and the ischiocrural muscles, your hamstrings, basically.
So these deep core muscles are reacting to stimuli, potentially even energetic ones, transmitted by light through fascia. It really does paint a picture of incredibly intricate, almost hidden wiring within us.
It does. And it makes you think, doesn't it? If the system is that complex and sensitive, what happens when stress takes hold and doesn't let go?
Yeah, exactly. What are the consequences then?
Well, the model describes a very measurable muscular reaction to these stress reflexes. It often shows up as a complete or partial torsion of the pelvis, a twist.
A twist in the pelvis.
Yes, or tension in those hip flexors or the adductors in the hips or shoulders. And this ties back to our basic flight or attack reflex, you know, that instinct to tense and twist when startled or threatened.
Right, the body preparing to move.
Exactly. But here's the crucial part in integral orthopedics. What happens when that stress is longer lasting? When we have those stress hormones released, But we don't actually, you know, run or fight. We don't use up that energy.
And just sit with it.
We sit with it. Or we don't get enough recovery time. The theory is this leads to a fixed stress state. Mm-hmm. And physically, that manifests as a fixed pelvic torsion.
So the twist just stays.
It stays. It becomes the body's default setting, in a way. And the insight here isn't just, oh, my pelvis is out of alignment. It's that this physical posture can be a direct, visible sign of a deep, perhaps subconscious, ongoing stress state.
And that fixed torsion, you mentioned it's linked to a blocked vagus nerve. What are the deeper implications of that? It sounds like it affects way more than just posture.
Oh, absolutely. A fixed pelvic torsion, in this view, signals a fixed stress state of the ANS, the autonomic nervous system, often with a blocked vagus nerve.
And the vagus nerve is key for relaxation, right?
It's crucial for the rest and digest side of things. So if it's blocked or impaired, your ability to relax, regulate, and regenerate properly is compromised.
Which would impact everything.
Pretty much. It reduces your resilience, your ability to bounce back from stress. It can affect your physical performance, your mental clarity, your creativity, even, as the source puts it, your emotional and spiritual vibratory capacity.
Wow. So it's not just a sore back. It's potentially limiting your whole experience of life.
That's the implication, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a systemic issue reflected in the posture.
And integral orthopedics actually outlines different states, right? Like a spectrum of how the ANS is functioning.
Yes, five distinct states, which can be quite helpful to understand. First, you've got the ideal, healthy relaxation mode.
Okay.
This is where you're functioning optimally. Good compensation, performance, creativity, joy, communication. Your body handles stress well. The pelvis is generally relaxed, but it can twist briefly under stress that's normal and healthy that goes back.
That makes sense. What's next?
Second is relative relaxation mode. Here you might feel okay, maybe adequately relaxed day to day.
Like you're coping.
Exactly. Just coping, not really thriving. And often there's a slight muscular pelvic torsion here, but it's one that can resolve with enough rest, movement, or a specific technique they call navel neck integration.
Okay, so it's not fixed yet.
Not fixed yet. But then you get to state three, fixed stress mode with persistent pelvic torsion. Now it's stubborn.
Harder to shift.
Much harder. Normal relaxation stuff, deep breathing, stretching might not be enough. This state, according to the source, often only resolves with things like scar integration or aura relief, which we can get into.
Aura relief. Okay, definitely want to hear more about that later. What's state four?
State four is fixed stress mode with ISG and ALIS blockages. So adding specific joint restrictions on top of the fixed stress.
ISG is the sacroiliac joint connecting spine and pelvis.
That's the one. And the ALIS is the very top vertebra in your neck.
Right under the skull.
Yes. So with these blockages layered on the fixed stress, you're looking at a higher risk of chronic recurring back pain, neck pain, and other issues. Or maybe you already have them.
That sounds like where a lot of chronic pain sufferers might find themselves.
Potentially, yes.
Mm.
And finally, state five, decompensated stress exhaustion mode.
Burnout, basically.
Essentially. Your stress hormones are so depleted, the body actually can't even produce the pelvic torsion anymore. There's just not enough energy for that stress response.
So the torsion disappears, but not in a good way.
Not at all. But here's a really interesting bit. If someone in this state starts getting effective treatment or rehabilitation, they might actually show a reverse progression. The pelvic torsion can reappear as the system starts to regain some energy and react again.
Wow.
And then it can start to relax properly as they move towards healthier states. So seeing the torsion come back can actually be a sign of recovery starting.
That is fascinating. The body has to regain the ability to show the stress before it can release it.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah.
It needs to re-engage that mechanism.
Okay, so to figure out where someone is and what's driving the stress, integral orthopedics uses specific reflexes, you mentioned.
Exactly. They delve into specific stress reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
One key one is the autonomic stress reflex. This describes how the body reacts to general stress with that asymmetrical tension of the fascial system, usually showing up as pelvic torsion.
And it involves specific muscles.
Yes. Typically, the iliopsoas is often on the left side, and then the opposing hip adductors, the quadratus lumborum, and the hamstrings.
And there's an anatomical reason for those specific muscles being involved.
Oh, definitely. The iliopsoas and quadratus lumborum are located really close to the sympathetic trunk, a major part of our fight or flight system. The psoas muscle actually shares a fascial sheath with the sympathetic system.
So they're physically linked.
Very closely. And the quadratus attaches near the 12th rib, which sits right over the adrenal glands where stress hormones are made.
Ah, okay. direct connection.
Plus, the hip flexor, the psoas, has long been known in various body therapies to have an affinity for emotional stress. It's often linked to the right brain hemisphere, functionally, due to how nerve pathways cross.
So tension in these specific muscle groups, or even in the shoulder flexors, could be a flag for an underlying ANS regulation issue.
That's the idea. It's like the body is speaking through these specific patterns. It's pretty incredible when you start looking for it.
It really paints a picture of these deep physical echoes of our stress state. So how do practitioners actually see this? How is it diagnosed?
Well, they use methods like the arm length test and leg length difference. These aren't exclusive to integral orthopedics. They're used in applied kinesiology and other fields too.
Right. I've heard of those. Checking if one arm or leg seems shorter.
Exactly. They're used to detect potential stress, triggers things like disturbing feels, allergens, even stressful beliefs. But what's really key here is the mention of its sensitivity.
Sensitivity in what way?
The source notes that sometimes just the belief of the therapist or the patient that something is stressful can be enough to cause the psoas to tighten and make the test look positive.
Wow. That really speaks to the power of the mind-body connection, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
Mm.
The test itself involves observing these apparent length differences. Like a tight iliopsoas on one side can cause the body to curve slightly, making the opposite arm and leg look shorter when lying down. And it also explains the mechanics. Iliopsoas tension rotates that side of the pelvis forward, which pushes the leg slightly downward, creating a functional leg lengthening on that side. Conversely, tension in the opposing quadratus lumborum rotates the pelvis backward, making that leg appear functionally shorter.
It's quite mechanical when you break it down like that.
It is, but driven by these deeper stress responses.
And building on that, there's another reflex mentioned, the integral stress reflex.
Yes. So in this model, remember, a relaxed pelvis is a good sign. It means your ANS is coping. It can integrate stress, emotional, physical, energetic.
Right. Regulation ability.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, the fascinating part of the integral stress reflex is this. Even if you're in that relaxed state, if you gently touch a subliminal disturbing field, like that problematic scar we mentioned, or a blocked atlas vertebra,
yeah,
you can cause a brief temporary pelvic torsion or tension in the shoulder adductors.
Even when relaxed.
It shows just how responsive the body is, how it's constantly monitoring for these underlying stressors, even if they're below your conscious radar,
yeah,
like a super sensitive internal alarm system.
Okay, so we've got this detailed picture of how the body reacts, these subtle tests, these signs of hidden stress. But the million-dollar question is, what do we do about it? How does integral orthopedics propose bringing things back into balance?
Right, that's the crucial next step. This leads us to what are called integration reflexes.
Mm-hmm.
These are basically tools or techniques used to temporarily relax the pelvis and shoulders when there is an ANS regulation disorder showing up as torsion.
Tools for release.
Exactly. The source describes the navel, disturbing field, and laser reflexes. It suggests that gently touching the navel or the front of the neck or a specific disturbing scar or a problem joint like the atlas, SI joint, or even the jaw can lead to a direct temporary relaxation of that pelvic torsion. It's quite immediate.
Just touching those spots can do that?
Apparently so, in many cases. Also, it mentions using a simple red laser pointer on the navel or a scar can have a similar direct relaxing effect on the ANS.
A red laser pointer?
Yeah.
Interesting.
But there's a caveat. These direct reflexes tend to work unless there's what's called an overriding, mostly energetic stress state.
Okay, so what if they don't work? What if you touch the navel or neck and nothing changes in the pelvis? What does that indicate?
That's a really important diagnostic clue, actually. If those simple touches don't bring about relaxation, it suggests there's an overriding burden on the ANS. And the source suggests this is mostly due to an energetic disturbing field.
An energetic disturbing field. Okay, we touched on aura relief earlier. Is this related? Can you unpack that concept a bit more?
It is related. It's a core concept here. Inner orthopedics proposes that certain areas can hold this kind of subtle energetic charge or disruption. Think of it maybe like static cling, but on an energetic level, often linked to old traumas, injuries, scars, or even intense emotional imprints.
Like an energetic residue.
That's one way to think of it, yeah. It creates this ongoing low-level stress signal that overrides the simpler physical relaxation cues.
Mm-hmm.
In older, more chronic cases, it might also stem from a persistent fascial irritation, maybe around the atlas or the costicus, the tailbone.
Right. So how do you test for that?
It's quite unique. The practitioner slowly brings their hand towards the body, near a suspected area, The navel, neck, a scar, maybe the eyes, jaw, atlas, coccyx, or an old injury site.
Okay.
And the aha moment, as the source describes it, is that directly at the edge of the disturbing field, which is apparently felt by both the patient and therapist, often as a zone of increased pressure or resistance, the pelvic torsion resolves.
Just by finding the edge of this field with the hand.
Just by approaching that boundary, the tension pattern can temporarily release. The hand is then held there, sometimes slightly tilted, to help dissolve or dissipate that field.
That's wild. And does it do anything else?
Often, yes. A significant secondary effect mentioned is that unprocessed emotions and physical tensions are also released simultaneously. So it can be quite a profound release.
A physical and emotional clearing, potentially.
Potentially. And then you retest. If some disturbing fields are still present, the pelvic torsion might reappear after a bit. But now, the navel, disturbing field, and laser reflexes, those simpler ones, should test positive.
Ah, because the overriding energetic layer has been dealt with.
Exactly. It suggests the remaining ANS disturbance is now primarily on the physical level, which can be addressed differently. It's like peeling an onion.
That makes sense. It's a layered approach. So once you've identified these things, what are the actual integration techniques used for longer-term relief?
Right. These are described as three indirect reflexes aimed at relieving the ANS and the fascial system more deeply. They're generally held for longer periods, sometimes combined.
And the goal is sustained relaxation.
Yes. The pelvis temporarily relaxes during the technique, and the idea is to continue until the relevant disturbing field and physical tension points are relieved. And again, the source emphasizes that long-held emotions can also be released during these processes.
So it's really holistic.
Very. And these aren't necessarily one-shot fixes. They might need repetition. The suggestion is that at least the aura relief and the navel neck integration should be applied daily if possible, ideally before the pelvic torsion pattern reestablishes itself.
Okay, so what are the specific techniques?
First is aura relief, disturbing field relief. This is that technique of slightly tilted holding of the hand at the boundary of the disturbing field we just discussed to help clear that energetic burden.
Got it.
Second is navel integration. This involves gentle touching and guiding the navel in the free direction, usually with the middle finger, while the hand rests lightly on the stomach. The other hand might be placed on the front of the neck, or maybe a tense area elsewhere, like the flank.
Gentle guidance of the navel.
Very gentle. And third is scar integration. This involves touching scars as gently as possible and moving the skin around them very slightly in the pleasant or free direction. The idea is to release any fascial drag or energetic imprint from the scar. Ideally, the other hand might be doing navel integration simultaneously.
Acknowledging that even old scars can be active stressors.
Exactly. Subtle, but potentially significant.
This has been a really deep dive, appropriately named. We've covered a lot, from these expanded reflexes and photon conduction to how stress locks into the pelvis, the different ANS states, and these unique integration techniques involving touch, energy fields, even lasers. It really offers a different framework for understanding those deep connections between our nerves, our fascia, and our emotional state.
It certainly does. And I think the real takeaway is that knowledge is powerful, especially when you can understand it and apply it. These perspectives on reflexes, on energetic fields, they offer potential pathways to regain better regulation in the body, boost resilience.
And maybe unlock more freedom physically and emotionally.
Exactly. It's about looking at the whole picture, considering these different layers of how we function and how we might heal. There's always more to learn, isn't there?
Always. So for everyone listening, maybe take a moment to reflect on your own body. Think about those subtle signals. Is there persistent tension somewhere, a feeling of being slightly off or stuck? Mm-hmm. Could it be your body communicating one of these underlying stress states we've talked about? Maybe these ideas offer a new lens, a new way to approach your own well-being, looking beyond just the surface symptoms.
It's worth considering, and perhaps a final thought to leave you with.
Mm-hmm.
If our fascia, this connective tissue network, can really conduct information via photons.
Yeah.
What does that truly suggest about our body's capacity for light-based communication? Not just internally, but maybe even interacting with light and energy in our environment in ways we don't fully grasp yet. And how could we, perhaps consciously, start to work with these subtle energetic processes for deeper healing and vitality?
That is definitely something to mull over. A fascinating place to end.